Okay, Bob, just by way of review to get into the class tonight. talked last week, or Sunday, actually. Steve did introduce the topic. When you talk about authority, just briefly, what is it? What is authority?
Right to rule.
Right to act. We looked at both of those in the course of the study Sunday. We talked about two types of authority in that class. What are they? Two types of authority. I heard somebody, I can hear better than Steve. I don't know how much better, but I can hear better than Steve. I heard it. Inherent. And who has inherent authority before we go to the next one? God. Why? It's the Creator. And looked at being the Creator, being the author, being all wise and powerful. He is the Creator and has inherent authority. Another word for inherent being talked about was sovereign. You excuse me while I adjust all these things so they're not in my way. What's the other type of authority? Delegated authority. Who has that? Yeah, everybody else. And in fact, all other kinds of authority, maybe is a better way of saying it, is delegated authority beyond sovereign or inherent authority of God. We had begun Sunday, or kind of ended up Sunday, in Silence Does Not Give Consent, that section on page 6. And had gotten down, as I mentioned, to Hebrews 7 and 12. Let's read, if you would, open your Bibles up to Hebrews 7, 12. In fact, we'll start in 11. Now, perfection was through the Levitical priesthood, for on the basis of it, the people received the law. What further need was there for another priest to arise according to the order of Melchizedek, and not be designated according to the order of Aaron? For when the priesthood is changed, of necessity there takes place a change of law also. But the one concerning whom these things are spoken belongs to another tribe, from which no one has officiated at the altar. For it is evident that our Lord was descended from Judah, a tribe with reference to which Moses spoke nothing concerning priests. Why did the writer here, Hebrews, argue that someone could not serve that was in the tribe of Judah? It's not a hard question.
Because they weren't authorized.
Well, that's... they weren't authorized to. Who was allowed to serve as priest? According to the law. Of course, his point is, if we're going to have a change of priesthood, the law is going to have to change. But as he makes his argument from what? Does he make his argument from a prohibition saying that no one from the tribe of Judah can serve as priest? Of necessity, there needs to be a change of law if somebody does, right? But my point is, did he say nobody from the tribe of Judah could serve? Was there a prohibition he named in the law? Did the law say anything about the tribe of Judah not, somebody from the tribe of Judah not serving as priest?
No, it said they had to be from Levites.
Right. So there was silence, wasn't there? It was specified who would serve, the tribe that would serve as priest. In fact, it's more specifically as high priest, which is what is in view here. High priest had to be Aaron's lineage. And so the writer of Hebrews does not make the argument about the validity of the need for a change of law on the basis of anything negative, but rather the positive. That is, God had specified. God had chosen. Moses spoke nothing concerning the key words. Moses spoke nothing. And so silence, the point being, silence does not give consent. The law, the old law, there was never anything said about Judah, anybody from any other tribe for that matter, serving as priests. The fact that the old law was silent on the matter didn't give the right, therefore, to serve, if you're from another tribe, as a priest. See? So that's his argument. His argument is not from the standpoint of prohibition, but actually his argument is from the standpoint of God chose. And otherwise, the scriptures were silent on others. Okay? 1 Chronicles 13. Oh, by the way, I probably will keep forgetting to do this. I'll try to remember. You have a quiz. On this lesson. Of course, the routine we're in is fill out the quiz before you do the lesson, but presumably that was done. Your answer number 5 is 5 what? The Bible does not specifically forbid a practice then what? See? Speak up. See.
Respect for authority. Did you go on number 5?
Number 5 on the quiz. You got less than one quiz, Mark?
I guess I'm looking at the quiz. Yes. What is class number 2?
Class number 1.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's why you're having a little trouble making sense out of that. Okay. So it's 5C. You know, the Bible does not specifically forbid a practice. You know, then it may or may not be all right. You have to look at other data. Okay? And we'll see that throughout. All right, 1 Chronicles 13. This was when they were, first time David wanted to bring the ark back to Jerusalem. And he says in verse 1 of chapter 13, David consulted with the captains, with the thousands and the hundreds, even with every leader. David said to all the assembly of Israel, "If it seems good to you, and if it is from the Lord our God, let us send everywhere to our kinsmen who remain in the land, in all the land of Israel, and to the priests and the Levites who are with them in their cities with pasture lands, that they may meet with us. And let us bring back the ark of our God to us, for we did not seek it in the days of Saul." Then all the assembly said that they would do so, for the thing was right in the eyes of the people. So David assembled all the assembly. Let's drop down to verse 8. David and all Israel were celebrating before God with all their might, even with songs, etc., etc. So they went out to get the ark. We know the story. Uzzah touches the ark, tries to steady the ark, and dies on the spot. And the ark has not come back, but rather David would later, as we see in chapter 15, would get the ark on an entirely different, go after the ark on an entirely different basis than what he did the first time. Question. Who approved the original plan? Chapter 13. Who approved the original plan to go get the ark?
Everybody.
Just read it.
Everybody.
Leaders, elders, the people. If you look over in, I don't know if Steve gave the reference or not, 1 Samuel 6, I think it is. 2 Samuel 6. Talked about there the leaders of being in the 30,000 kind of number. I mean, it's a big number. And you see them coming as they were talking about bringing back the ark. They were excited about it, doing it with all their might, and yet was God pleased?
No.
No. D. 15:2. And David said, "No one is to carry the ark of God but the Levites, for the Lord chose them to carry the ark of God and to minister to him forever." Look down at verse 13. "Because you did not carry it at the first, the Lord our God made an outburst on us, for we did not seek him according to the ordinance." When God specifies, God chooses, do we have a right to change God's choice? Do these people have a right to change God's choice? He made it pretty clear, didn't he, that he was upset with them. God, did God say you couldn't carry on a cart?
No.
No. What did God do? What has God done?
He told them exactly how to do it.
It told them, right? Told the tribe, told the means by which they were to do it, poles on their shoulders, not a cart in the Kohathites. Yeah. And so God has specified. When God specified, well, you didn't need to worry about what he didn't specify at that point. And so they paid the price. And so here's just another example where silence does not give consent. Let me get that in a minute. If you look in your lesson, Steve made comment in his lesson, the fact that this is the Old Testament does not invalidate the point. And I think if you go back to our first class, remember we talked about as Jesus in Matthew 28 was giving the Great Commission, and all authority is going to be given unto me. And he talked about the commandments that he would give. We went back and looked at Deuteronomy 4. What did that entail? It entailed not adding to and not taking from. And so the same concept, same type of language is used in what we just read. Look down at verse 15 of chapter 15. "The sons of Levites carried the ark on their shoulders with the pole." You know, this is when it was doing it the right way, "with the poles thereon, as Moses had commanded according to the word of the Lord." So just like was stated in Deuteronomy 4, when you talk about the commandments of God, do not add to, do not take away. Christ in the Great Commission, do not add to, do not take away. And so you see a very similar kind of language, and recognizing that you're dealing with in the New Testament, as Christ said what he said to his disciples, that he was talking to people that would be very familiar with this kind of terminology. There is a contrast, if you like, made, and Steve listed this, God's attitude. Think about that for a minute. God made a choice. And on the other side were the people. They were zealous. You know, we read about it. They were just terribly zealous about all of this, excited about it when they tried to do it their way. But that did not translate God's mind to being okay. God was upset with them because they didn't follow his way. Okay? And we don't, there's an illustration given, authorized vehicles. It's been used many times. You see it on the road, authorized vehicles only. Can't tell you how many times I've looked at that. I told Linda, I said, "Well, I've got a license on my car. My car's inspected. I have a driver's license. Therefore, I'm authorized. I have an authorized vehicle. I'm driving down the road in an authorized vehicle." Of course, I know better. That's not what it means. When it says authorized vehicles only, do we have to say people with you can't drive through there if you're not part of the state? The DOT, or you can't do that if you're not a policeman, or you can't do that, you know, get the message. It is authorized vehicles only. Vehicles only. We understand that means authorized vehicles only. It's exclusion of everything else. You don't have to state everything else. And this is similar. We do this all the time, and it's not different than what we understand the way God has communicated. Okay? Anything about that Anybody has any comments? I do have one thing I do want to mention. Keep thinking of things I want to mention. Real case. Steve and I were talking. He happened to be, he and Pat were down with Juanita. I guess it was either today or yesterday. And a local preacher and his wife came to visit Juanita. And while they were there, Juanita was challenging this couple as to why in the world they cleaned out the foyer, the lobby of the church where he preached, and replaced all the stuff that was in there with Halloween decorations. And his wife, in defense of it, I guess, said, "Well, we hand out, you know, we do hand out candy to the kids." And that was, you know, you might imagine Juanita's not bashful usually, and she didn't think that was a very good response. But she went on and pressed her point that the church should not be involved in those kinds of activities. You know what the preacher said? "We don't have authority for having funerals and weddings in the building, but we do that too." And remember, what's happening here is the Bible doesn't forbid, this logic that was being expressed by this man is the Bible doesn't forbid it. Therefore, we can do it. We can have Halloween decorations, we can hand out candy to the kids, we can have a kitchen, we can have basketball, whatever. So this is a real way of thinking. You know, this is not academic. It's what people think in the world. Okay? Real life example. All right. See, authority and indicators of authority. I know I've been guilty of it, that in the past of confusing something said, well, that's the authority part. No, authority shouldn't be confused with the things that indicate authority. Authority, the right to act, is something that, in the context of what we're talking about, comes from God. Authority comes from God and is delegated to us through what he tells us. And so don't confuse the idea of authority with all these things that we use. And you've heard for years, I have, you know, the commands, examples, necessary inference or implications, statements as being authority. Well, they're indicators of authority, and you take those and study and harmonize to determine what is God's will. And so some of these things may seem somewhat strange until you just start looking at them. Specific command, statement, example doesn't necessarily mean something is authorized. We can look at some examples of that. In Numbers 2:20, here you got Balaam wanting Balaam to go out and curse Israel. And so Balaam in Numbers 22 is in the midst of doing that, having refused to do it the first time. And you see in 22:20 what God says to him. God came to Balaam at night and said to him, "If the men have come to call you, rise up and go with them. But only the word which I speak to you shall you do." So did God command him to go? Didn't God command him to go? Is that what it said? Come on. y'all not asleep tonight. Come on. Not a trick question. Did God command him to go? But the language, that's what the Bible says, isn't it? Is that what it means? You know, that is a trick question. Is that what it means? Did it authorize Balaam to go?
Yes.
Well, see, here's where you get yourself to have to look at. Well, what's the rest of the story? What happens?
He didn't
He didn't want her to go. It's what you call satirical irony, if you like. And you look at that, you can see that when Balak tried to get Balaam to go the first time, God told him not to, and he refused to go. Here's the second time. God had already made a decision. Here's the second time, and money comes into the picture as well, and he decides, well, maybe I should go back to God and ask. So God tells him to go. But you can look at the rest of the chapter. Look at verse 22 to start with. But God was angry because he was going. Wait a minute. He told him to go, but he was angry because he was going? So here's the satirical irony of this thing. Yeah, sure, Balaam. You're going to go anyway. Go. God was angry with him. God really didn't authorize him to go. He told him out of satire to go. Okay? And you can see that also in the rest. If you look at the rest of the events that happened, and the donkey and that whole bit, that how there was a desire apparently on God's part to bring to Balaam's attention what was really the God's view of what he was doing. Any questions about that? See, a command in and of itself does not authorize something. Yeah, Mark.
Verse 20, when it says, "And God said, and God came unto Balaam at night and said to him, the men are come to call thee, rise up, but with but condition, but only the word which I speak unto thee, that shalt thou do." So was he angry with him for going?
He was angry. It just says he was angry because he was going.
Does the rest of the context indicate it was based on motive?
I don't know if it was or not. I mean, I say I don't know. Obviously, it was to the extent that he chose to go because of his self-interest, not because of his obedience to God. So, sure, there was motive there. Not to serve God. Okay? You look at it, here's a command. Example for a command. Look at Mark 7:9. Here's a statement. Another, if you're going to say this is authority, well, here's an interesting statement. It's May 7:9. This has to do with the washing of hands. So Jesus responded to the Pharisees and the scribes. He was also saying to them, "You are experts at setting aside the commandments of God in order to keep your traditions." So he was saying, "Y'all are good at this." Basically, y'all do nicely. I think there's one of the other versions say, "You nicely set aside." And again, here it is with a statement of irony, bitter irony. Should they have been setting aside the commandments of God? Absolutely not. But that's what they're doing for their traditions. So here's just a statement Jesus made. Do we take this statement as being, well, that's a commendation for us to do something? No, quite the contrary. And then look at an example that's given to you. Example, Hebrews 4:11. What was that example of? The Hebrew writer was making an argument about how the nation of Israel had been refused rest in the land. Right? And he was charging those he was writing to in Hebrews not to follow their example of what? Disobedience. Here's an example you don't want to follow. So when you look at things, the only point of this is when you trying to ascertain what is authorized is you gather up all of these factors, but they in and of themselves do not, they are not the authority. They are basis for defining, for understanding what authority is. Yeah.
I would say in that passage in Numbers 22, it's interesting. We're talking about the angel of God stops the donkey. I should say stands
in the way.
Donkey stops three times. The donkey turns away. He takes the tail of the feet and turns away. I just grab the donkey and I'll kill you.
Yeah, dead.
And it's interesting. When Balaam says, in verse 34, it says, and Balaam said unto the angel of Jehovah, I have sinned, for I knew not that thou stoodest in the way against me. Now, therefore, if it pleaseth thee, I will get me back again. Interesting what he says in 35. The angel of God responds with it. And the angel of Jehovah said unto Balaam, go with the men. He tells him to go with the men. He repeats his condition. And from the first time he told him to go with men, he says, and the angel of God said unto Balaam, go with the men, but only the word that I shall speak unto thee, that thou shalt speak. So Balaam went with the princes of Balaam. So, at least by inference, it appears to me that he was all right for him to go with him. He was authorized even the first time. But when he was stopped this, and then told he'd go the second time, the angel of God reiterates to him that you should only speak what I said.
And he hadn't been stopped, what would have happened?
If he hadn't been stopped.
I mean, if the donkey had not saved him, what would have happened?
Well, he would have died.
And he would not have said anything, would he?
I didn't understand.
He would not have said anything at that point. He would have been dead.
Right, he wouldn't have said anything.
So, yeah, look, the God had, going back, God knows what Balaam was thinking. And whether or not God made his statement to Balaam to go on and go, whether or not God knew Balaam's heart and that he was going to work this to go one way or the other, I do not know. The text doesn't. I don't get that out of the text. But it's quite conceivable God at that point knew what he was doing. That Balaam had decided in his own mind he was going to work this one way or another to be able to go. And God just said, go on and go. But was he happy about it? I don't think he was happy about it. He didn't have to be angry about Balaam going. I think I can find other examples if that one was not sufficient about commands.
I know that when God tells people the other different instances, he gives them permission to go do something. And he does not then intervene a second time and stop and reiterate the condition. Suggests to me they're going to do his will. But in the case of Balaam. And we know, of course, by hindsight, that Balaam did cause the children of Israel to stumble. So we know his heart wasn't clean. But later on, he did.
Sure.
God
chronology.
Moses. But it just seems to me, reading this, the condition is he can go if he obeys. That seems to be in the first instance in verse 20, and then reiterated in verse 30, if I can see it 30.
Okay.
And so it greatly suggests the problem wasn't him going, the problem was him obeying, because that's what God emphasized.
Y'all can study that on your own. I'll have this discussion later. Okay. Another item. The fact that something is not specified doesn't mean it's unauthorized. Just because a practice is not mentioned doesn't necessarily mean it's unauthorized. And you go to Mark 14, where did they meet? The Passover, what Jesus instructed his disciples to do? Go into town, find a guy, go up. Large room has been prepared for you. For the Passover, right? Large upper room. Everybody with me?
Yes.
Okay. Now let's go to the Old Testament. Or in the Old Testament, you find that you should meet in an upper room for the Passover. Large upper room. I mean, if you know the verse, bring it up. Is it authorized to meet in a large upper room for the Passover? Then? Was it authorized? I mean, I don't think Jesus, if you say it wasn't, then all of a sudden you're going to be running into yourself with Jesus because he didn't sin. He was there and he was going to give him instructions. So the fact that something was not specified, large upper room, or any given particular room, wasn't specified, does not mean that it isn't authorized. Same thing. We've had this, and we'll talk about this. Steve will talk about this later. When you talk about inductive reasoning and generic and specific authority, but it's just like the statement with the discussion we had earlier in the week about water fountain. You know, where's the authorization for? Or, let me say it another way: are water fountains and pews and buildings authorized? See. They're not specified, but are they authorized? And we'll study about that later. So, point being that just because something specific is missing doesn't mean that it is unauthorized. Could mean it, but it doesn't necessarily mean it. Another one is a specific is not necessarily required. Romans 16:16, what's it say? Greet one another with what?
A holy kiss.
Holy kiss. And so, here's a specific. It's a command. Okay, I didn't get kissed coming in here. So, somebody must not be doing right, huh? So, the question is, was this instituted in practice, or was this just regulating the custom? And, it's customary to do to kiss, but that for and it still is for that matter in some countries. You see it on TV all the time. You know, Europeans kiss. Some of them, cheek kind of kiss. And so that was a common cultural greeting. Paul's point was discussing the character of your greeting, your character in your greeting. Okay, that's a command. There's an example in the case of Acts 11:30. Sending funds. Do you need to have two messengers? Or is one enough? Or is the U.S. postal system good enough? See? So here are examples where there are specifics, but they're not necessarily required in terms of conducting whatever activity is in view. And again, it requires gathering up all the facts to reach the conclusion about what is authorized. I don't know about you, but I'm not real interested in sitting on a ledge and being preached to in the midnight and then falling off and, dying kind of thing. And yet that's, Acts 20. Acts 20, you see that happen. And so you've got a specifics that were laid out in the Bible, but that doesn't have anything to do with a requirement, or that's not a requirement in terms of the conduct of our worship. And we'll develop that, or it'll be developed as time goes on. Okay. Questions about any of that before we go on? All right. Difference in power and authority. Oh, by the way, I told you I'd jump over to these. I guess we hit question five. Question eight on your lesson, on your quiz. What's the answer to question eight? Authority and power. Okay, C fits. B fits. Okay, A fits. A, B, and C. So we'll see that. Par. Different word. Has to do with ability, strength, the ability to carry out something. If you look at Matthew 8, 9, we looked at this at the very first lesson. In that case, the centurion had authority to order men. He also had men under his authority that he could make men obey him. So he had both the power in terms of, he had both the authority and the power to execute that authority. So sometimes it is included. There are times when power includes authority as well. When Peter and John were before the Jewish leaders after they had healed the lame man, the question was asked of them, by what power or in what name? Or that is, by what power, your power? And as far as being able to heal the lame man, and by what name or by what authority do you do what you do? So again, you've got, these things can sometimes overlap, but they can be distinguished. Look at Luke 4:36. Luke 4:36, and amazement came upon them all, and they began talking with one another, saying, "What is this message? For with authority and power he commands the unclean spirits, and they come out." So he has the authority. He also has the power. And so one would do, if he just had the authority but didn't have the wherewithal to do it, it wouldn't be done. And the same thing's true in Luke 9. There it's talking about Jesus giving the apostles power and authority to cast out demons. You can illustrate this. I mean, this is common sense to us. If I decided to go rob a bank, I'd get arrested, no doubt. I'd be a lousy robber. I'd get shot. But, I could be successful. I'd rob the bank. But I had a gun. I had the power to rob the bank. Do I have the authority? No, I have the authority. I want to start a business. Can I start a business in this country, in this city? I'll go down and get a license. It says on there I'm authorized. Can I start a business? I have the authority to start a business. Just so happens I don't have the money. So do I have the power to start a business? Do I have the ability to start a business? I don't have any ideas either, by the way. I just want to, be authorized to start a business. So you can, and we see that in common, just what goes on in common day life. And so there are distinctions between these two. Okay? Key point is, might does not make right. You can... There are biblical examples. One of them listed here was Jeroboam. Jeroboam set up Bethel and Dan to be the places of worship for the nation of Israel. Did he have the ability to do that? Yes, he was king. Did he have the right? Did he have authority? Was he authorized? Of course not. Same thing around Saul. Saul was to kill the Amalekites. He had the authority to kill the Amalekites given to him. In fact, the charge was given to him. He had the ability, the power to do it. Did he have but he didn't. He didn't. He kept the good stuff, the king, alive. And so did he have the power not to kill? Yes. He demonstrated it. Did he have the authority not to kill? No. God had said kill. And so... we get this concept, might does not make right. Just because we have the ability to do it, just because I happen to be 7 foot away, 300 pounds, and wrestle you to the ground doesn't mean I have the authority to do that. I could get arrested for it. Okay? Q9, question 9. And we'll, I'm going to get buzzed here in a minute. Question 9, what's the answer? Sorry?
C.
C. Okay. 9C. And we looked at Matthew 8, 28, 20, first lesson. Romans 10, 9. Of course, confess Jesus as Lord. And, okay, I will stop right there.
I
don't know. What is the answer to question 7? I didn't ask. What's going to answer question 7? We've talked about it.
A.
Okay. Anybody want to argue? A. Man's statements, examples, implications serve as indicators. Okay. All right. Thank you. You have. If you don't have quiz number 2, pick them up. Sunday I'll hand out lesson 2. But go ahead and do quiz 2 just on your own, based on your own knowledge, without looking at the Bible, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? Thank you very much.